नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, chapter 21, Conversation between Manu and Kadama. Text number 48. Ato tajam upayatam nidevam pranatam pura sapayaya payak. Long one. Pratinanjanu rupaya atot jam upayatam atot jam upayatam nidivam pranatam pura Nidevam pranatam pura Sapayaya prayagrinat Sapayaya prayagrinat Pratinanjanurupaya Pratinanjanurupaya Atotajam upayatam Nidevam pranatam pura Sapayaya prayagrinat Pratinanyanurupaya Atta Then Utajam, the hermitage. Upayatam, approach. Nidevam, the monarch. Pranatam, bow down. Pura, in front. Sapayaya, with honor. Payagrinat, receive him. Pratinandya, greeting him. Anurupaya, befitting the king's position. Translation. Seeing that the monarch had come to his hermitage and was bowing before him, the sage greeted him with benediction and received him with due honor. Purport by Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Emperor Swayambhu Manu not only approached the cottage of dried leaves possessed by the hermit Kadama, but also offered respectful obeisances unto him. Similarly, it was the duty of the hermit to offer blessings to kings who used to approach his hermitage in the jungle. Atotajam upayatam Nidevam pranatam pura sapayaya prayagrinat pratinanja nurupaya. Translation again. Seeing that the monarch had come to his hermitage and was bowing before him, the sage greeted him with benediction and received him with due honor. Om Gyana Timrandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Shaksumalitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Padale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Name Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pucharine Nivisesa Sunyavadi Pasicha Deshatarine. So previous speakers have spoken on this chapter about the description there, how beautiful are the animals, the different species of plants. And Gangrisha Prabhu spoke about control of the mind, quoting how Prabhupada said that control of the mind is very, very difficult. In fact, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna and Bhagavad Gita also say, no, actually Arjuna also claim it, that you're asking me to perform yoga to control the mind, but it's very, very difficult. It's like trying to control the wind. today I would like to speak about three things, if I manage to remember all three, based on this chapter. One is how Krishna makes every necessary arrangement for his devotees. When Krishna makes the arrangement, everything just comes into place very nicely and fit perfectly. And a culture of respect, as described in this verse, and also the father making marriage arrangement, that's what is going to be happening when Swayambhu Manu come to the hermitage of Kadama. Now, culture of respect, I remember when in the early days when we first joined the temple, every morning we always offer respect to the temple president. And we always offer not just respect, but offer obeisances. And between devotees, we're always offering obeisances. Every time we see one another, we always offer obeisances. And that culture is almost non-existent to a large degree. It occasionally still happens, but to most part, you don't see that happening very much. Am I wrong? I'm wrong? Yeah. Normally when we meet, I say, Hari Haribo, how are you? Like Prabhupada would say, how are you? Useless question. Depends on where you're asking, how am I? So if I'm performing devotional service, I'm fine. If I'm not, I'm not fine. And of course, when Narada Muni visited the ashram of Vyasadeva, he asked, how are you? But he didn't just say, how are you? He said, how is your body and mind? Because Vyasadeva was, he has written the Puranas, the Vedas, and he's done so much work, but he was still not feeling satisfied. So he was sitting in his ashram contemplating, what have I not done, what have I done wrong, that I did so much work and I'm still not satisfied. So Narada Muni, his guru, came. The first thing, by his question, indicating to him, this is what is wrong. Yes, you've written all these, the Vedas, the Puranas, the Upanishad, but mostly dealing with the body and the mind. And that's why you're not satisfied. Now you want real satisfaction, then you should describe about the glories, the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's where you find real satisfaction. And throughout the Bhagavad Gita, throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, the topic of Kirtanam, Sravanam is this interspersed all over. In fact, we have this conversation between Manu and Kadama. When they come together, when they talk, what do they talk about? They don't just talk about the weather and how's your work. Of course, they ask about how is things going on in terms of your prescribed duties and so on. But how they receive one another is so nice. That's the benefit of having proper culture. How Swayambhu Manu, he was the emperor. But he would come out to the forest and visit the hermitage of Kadama. And when he come down, he bowed down. He's the emperor, when he climbed, he bowed down to this sage who was just in his ashram, very supposedly very poor. Nowadays, when someone talk about humble, you talk, oh, he come from a humble beginning, which basically means you're poor, right? But according to the Vaishnava philosophy of Vedic understanding, to be humble, that's strength. That's actually opulence, to have the quality of humility. Because in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna described the symptoms of knowledge. What are symptoms of knowledge? What are the first two items that he mentioned? Humility, pridelessness, These are the first two qualities described when describing knowledge. So someone, only someone who has real knowledge can be humble. We can walk around artificially humble, Haribol Prabhu, Haribol Prabhu, Haribol Prabhu, Haribol. And then as soon as we get poked a little bit, why do you do that? Right? So it's not just a matter of exhibiting false humility, but real humility. And that humility comes from understanding the greatness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and how small we are in relationship to Him. Right? Krishna is finite, and we are infinitesimal. We may be great. In fact, the spirit is very great. The spirit soul is great. It's described that it's more powerful than 1,000 suns. But compared to Krishna, it's like a little glow. Then we are like a little glowworm, like a little firefly. If it's a single firefly, it's just a little spark. But when in front of the sun, you don't see the firefly. You can see the firefly only in the night. So, yes, we may be great, but we can have humility when we compare the greatness to Krishna's greatness. Then you put us into perspective. And whatever greatness we have is a reflection of Krishna's greatness. It's because of the power of Krishna invested in us, we are able to exhibit those abilities. Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita also, I'm the ability man. And whatever great opulence I've described here, this is just a spark of my splendor. But sometimes we forget that. Forgetting how whatever a great ability we have is coming from Krishna is like after a great performance. Like if someone, a musician, go on stage and perform with a violin. And at the end of the performance, when there's a standing ovation, and the violin just kicked the musician aside, and violin walk up front and take a bow and accept all the applause. We think it's weird. But that's exactly what's happening. If we actually take all the glories without actually passing on to Krishna, that actually ultimately is His glories. Of course, Krishna also wants the devotees to take to be glorified. Like Prabhupada said that in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna showed the universal form, Krishna basically showing Arjuna that all these soldiers are killed. Why you worry about it? Why are you so much in anxiety about killing them? They already been killed. I already killed all of them. But I want you to take the glories. And Prabhupada also said, this Bhaktivinoda Thakur already predicted the temple will be built. He already saw it. In Mahabharata, the temple is built. Lord Nityananda already predicted that the holy name will be spread to every town and village. It will happen. But Prabhupada certainly said, but He left some work for us to do so we can take also some part of the glory. Right? If they did everything, then what are we going to do? So at least He leaves something for us and we have to endeavor it. And those endeavor that we make is purify. It purifies us from the anathas. The more we endeavor to serve Krishna, the more we engage in the preaching mission, the more we get purified. And the more we get purified, the closer we get to Krishna. Right now, the distance between us and Krishna is just a false ego. I misidentify the body as a self, the mind. But once you realize that I'm not this body and truly I realize it, then we get closer and closer to Krishna. So much so they're standing side by side. So and because these are great personality, they train, first of all, they train in brahmacharya, they understand, proper discipline, control of the senses, control of the mind, and the study of the Vedas. And the king, they're prepared. Before they become king, they're prepared. Like even Ramchandra and his brother, they were sent to the ashram of Agastya Muni. And they were trained. They're there and they perform austerities. Krishna also went to the ashram of Sandipani Muni to learn from him and perform austerities. He would have to go to the forest to pick firewood And after performing all this austerity when they graduate, then they offer dakshin, the king. So even the supreme personality of Godhead, when they appear as kshatriyas, they also perform all these austerities in ashram and learn and get trained to become proper kings. So this is all about our training. But because most of us don't have this training when we're young, we have to learn it now. And that's hard. It's not easy. Because in 15, 20 years, 25, 30, whatever years we join ISKCON, some of us, of course, like you are from India, so there's still some remnants of the culture there. But what we learn from our parents and from the culture, we don't know how much it is actually Vedic culture or local folk laws. It's all mumbo jumbo up. It's all mixed up. And that's even more difficult. You know? We have to sort it out. What is acceptable, what is not acceptable. So, and that's why when this student went to the guru, the story, he wants to learn Madanga. He charged him anyway, whatever, he said, 100 rupees. He said, but I already know how to play Madanga, I already know something, some bit. He said, then it'll cost you 200 rupees. So why cost more? He said, because you have to unlearn all these things. Then only I can teach you. So imagine the spiritual master nowadays. When they accept a disciple and try to train up a disciple, they have to learn so many things before we can actually teach something. Or when he's teaching something, then we filter it through our preconditioning that is already existing in us and filter through. So when you get filtered through, some get accepted, some don't get accepted, and it's not everything goes through. And that's why we have to listen over and over and over and over again. Pound it in. Then maybe something goes through. It's granite. It's covered by granite. So, but the culture is that you receive, when a guest comes to the house, you receive them. Prabhupada teaches is at least give them a seat, something to sit on. If you don't have chairs in furniture, at least have a straw mat. And sit. And offer them a drink, at least a glass of water. That's why Parikshit Maharaj, when he was hunting, he was very hungry and thirsty, and he came to the ashram of what's the name of that sage again? So he came there, but because this rishi was in deep meditation, and he didn't know that Maharaj Parikshit came. So he didn't receive a Maharaj Parikshit by the arrangement of Krishna. He became upset. Normally he would not have been upset, but there's some instigation there. So he became upset, picked up a dead snake and put it around the neck of the sage. And of course, the son came back, he was very upset, and he cursed the king to die by a snake bite in 7 days. But there was, Krishna arranged the whole pastime to prepare for Shukadeva Goswami to come along and speak Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit. But otherwise, normally such a great personality that they wouldn't have make this kind of discrepancy. So this culture is respect is very, very important. This is proper etiquette. In fact, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Sanatan Goswami, when he come to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it was in the middle of the summer. So you know in summer it can be very, very hot. So he came and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tested him and said, which way do you come? He said, I came by the, I think, Simhachari gate, in which he had to walk along the beach on the sand. He said, why didn't you come on the main gate? He said, no, because I'm so fallen. I'm so contaminated. If I pass by the main gate where the priests go in and out to serve Jagannath, they will get contaminated and they will have to take a bath again. So therefore I'm taking a longer way along the beach and walking on the hot sand. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so pleased with him. And he said, This Vaishnava etiquette is the jewel of the Vaishnava. Because when one practices etiquette, it shows culture, that someone is cultured. Maybe nowadays it may not be so well received or so much respected, but there's still people out there when you behave properly and we carry ourselves properly and we show proper culture, proper behavior, people respect that. You know, initially they make a joke of it, and they may even continue to make jokes out of it, but they actually respect it. And I see that a lot in my work, how the boss, they respect the way you carry yourself, the way you behave. It's, in other words, what we claim to believe is our faith, and how we behave, it has to be synonymous. It's not that we believe in something and then we act differently. What is internal within us has to be also external. So, okay, externally we may be performing our duties in different ways, but that internal spirit, our culture, whatever, it comes through, it shines through in our activities, in our speech. So much so that sometimes when we have a meeting and someone uses a foul word and they look at me, oh, CJ, sorry. Sorry. And the respect, because they know you don't use those languages, and they're so used to these languages. Every sentence is there, all these foul languages coming up. So how the emperor, although he's so powerful, controls armies, treasuries, and all the citizens respect him, when it comes to the hermitage of the poor, so seemingly poor ashram of this rishi, he bowed down and offered respect. Because the position of Brahmana is very much honored in Vedic society. And why is a Brahmana honored? They don't have wealth. They can't bribe anyone. Right? It's just nowadays, like in certain third world country of Banana Republic, when there's election time, they start distributing money everywhere to buy votes. Okay, you work for me here, $100, $500, whatever. All obtained through corruption. But that's why they say, don't command respect, or demand respect. Command respect. So they demand, try to buy the respect from people. People take the money, say thank you very much, and go with the life. But command it by our behavior, by how we act, how we speak. Like they say, you don't recognize a fool until he opens his mouth. So when someone speaks, you know where the person is at, depending on what is coming out from the mouth. So even though he's supposedly a poor Brahmana, where does he get his power from? That a great emperor will bow down to him. The Brahmana is known by his knowledge, by his austerity. Because of the austerity he performed, the wealth of the Brahmana is his austerity. Remember the last time in the class, I was talking about how the devotee, when they were preaching in Eastern Europe in sometime middle of winter, and they're living in the huts where there's no heating, there's no water system in the house. They have to go outside the forest to do their toilet treating, because they have to stay away in the forest, away from city, to stay away from the secret police. Right? So outside the house, they just tap with a bucket with just one drip of water they're dipping. So in the morning, there's a sheet of ice on top of the water. And they go out in the gamcha and take a lota, break the ice, and take a quick bath. So when they take a bath, they say, austerity of the way of Brahmana Prabhupada! And probably take another few hours to unfroze from that bath. So that's austerity. Matras pasasa kauntiya sitas nasuga dukada agama panyana yana tam tiksha subharita. One has to tolerate. There will be changing weather, hot, and winter, hot and cold, hot and cold. This, like the seasons coming and going, pleasure and pain, happiness, distress, they come and go, they're all temporary. So one has to learn to tolerate. So as brahmachari, they learn, these are one, some of the first things you learn. Learn to tolerate and perform your duties without being disturbed. So that's where you get all this wealth from, collection of wealth, of the austerity, the knowledge they've gathered. One of Brahman's job is to gain knowledge and teach knowledge. Worship deities and teach others how to worship deities. They will accept charity, but they also give away from charity. They will accept, use what they need, and then they just redistribute the rest. They will not hoard. They will not just store and keep it for emergency purpose. Just like this Migari, the hunter, when he was converted to Vaishnavism, delivered by Narad Muni, he said, "You asked me to bring my bow and arrow. How am I going to sustain myself? That's the only thing I know what to do, is half kill animals. That's how I was trained." He said, "Don't worry, I'll take care of it," Narad Muni said. And sure enough, the transformation of this hunter was spread far and wide, and villages around the area, they all keep coming. And when you come and see a sadhu, you bring gift. Right? So they bring gift and offer him so much foodstuff. The next time Narayan Muni came, first of all, he was going to offer obeisances, but saw some ants in the front. So he took off his chadar, hesitated, and removed, and then offered obeisances. And Narayan Muni at that time was with his friend, was it Angira Muni? Yeah. And Angira said, "I got a question. Why do you hesitate to offer? You should have offered obeisance immediately. But why do you hesitate?" He said, "Because I saw some ants. I'm just removing it." And Narayan Muni says, "Just see the power of the holy name. This person used to half kill animal. He enjoyed causing pain and sufferings to other entities. And now he wouldn't even harm an ant." And then Megato, he said, "You have sent so much food stuff. I cannot eat all of it. What am I going to do with it?" So for devotees, there's no shortages. Krishna provide. And like when Kadama Muni, he was instructed by Lord Brahma to procreate. What do you do? You start going around and start looking for wives? No. Immediately he went into a perform austerity and prepare himself. He prepared himself by performing austerity to purify his body, purify his mind, purify his consciousness, to prepare for the task at hand. And he meditated on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's how he prepared for any big task. Because that's where he gained the strength from. And once he prepared pure in mind, and Krishna understanding the need, he approached him. I said, "Don't worry, everything has already been arranged." And Krishna arranged everything perfectly. He's in everyone's heart. He knows what is best. And simultaneously, same time, Swabhu Mano is thinking, "My daughter is of marriageable age. Where am I going to find?" And so he approached Kadama Muni. That will be described later. So he approached, but that again it showed, you know, how the interaction, how they address one another. So he first, Sambhu Manu bow down, and Kadam will give his blessings to the king. And about this nice arrangement, sometimes, especially in the Western, even I guess in India nowadays also. In certain part, especially people who don't understand the West, they look down on this arranged marriage. The modern generation, they think this is strange, it's weird. Why arranged marriage? Even sometimes when I talk to people, even times when I mention to devotees, they're shocked. I say, "Actually, our marriage was arranged marriage. 34 years, still going strong." And arranged marriage. And that's even more weird because I'm not Indian. My wife is definitely not Indian. right? That is the race. And it makes so much sense when it's done properly. Everything is because when things are not done properly, then people are repel against it. And they look at, for example, they look at caste system. Because it's abused, they think caste system is bad. But caste system is originally supposed to be one ashram system. And how can it be bad when it's created by Krishna? It's a system for society to function properly, right? So sometimes when we talk about this thing, we have to take time to give, to prepare people and give an introduction of what it actually means. In fact, some of the terminology we use, we have to explain what those terminology means before you can actually talk about it. For example, false ego. When you talk about false ego, people nowadays think they think it's just pride. But you have to explain what is ego, what false ego means. So arranged marriage is not as bad when it's done properly, because naturally the father has great affection for the daughter and the son. They want the best for them. So when they make an arrangement, they go through a lot of trouble. They go through a lot of contemplation that, okay, my son or my daughter, they're of marriageable age. What can I do? There's a bit of concern too and worry. How can I make the best arrangement? Who would be the most suitable candidate? And they go through trouble, they go to astrological chart and blah, so many. And then when they find the most compatible and they think, okay, then maybe this work, and then the arrangement is made. And it was interesting when I was reading this chapter here, because just a few days ago, a very, very good friend of mine just sent a message on Facebook about that. And it was almost like, what's happening here and what's happening in his life. This dear friend of name is Pranan Chinshenga. His wife passed away last year, and this year during the Gopni festival, he was in India. And his elder son already graduated from Gurukul and traveling very often with him or with his spiritual master Indradhana Maharaj preaching. But the younger son stayed in the Gurukul, in the ashram, and he's the head boy. So, and he was there since he was, I don't know, 6 years old or something like that, 6 or 8 years old. So been there a long time. So while the parents and the brothers traveling, he performed that. He took on the austerity to just stay and complete his brahmacharya training in ashram under the guidance of Bhakti Punamaraj, yeah, Bhakti Vijaya Punamaraj and his disciples. So, and he was about to graduate, right? And he actually graduated now. So at that time, he was about to leave on his travel again, preaching tour. And the day before he left, he was contemplating, he said, and he was a bit concerned. He said, here we are, I'm about to leave again, traveling. My elder son is also going to be leaving Mayapur. And then the youngest one will be left behind, will be left all alone. And he's graduating. And he was concerned. And while he was contemplating, he looked out the window of the room in Mapu, and he saw his friend coming, approaching with his son. So he told his son, he said, so-and-so is coming. Please receive him. So they received, set them down. And this Prabhu was saying, he said, I thought you were leaving later, but I just found out that you're leaving now. So I got a proposal that my daughter is of marriageable age, your son is of marriageable age, I want to propose my daughter in marriage to your son, please consider it. So just see how Krishna made the arrangement. He was contemplating what to do, and then the arrangement was made there. It just fell into place. And of course it was a shock, like suddenly it just came out of nowhere. And he said, all right, let's do the chart. And I said, okay, chart look promising. And the elder brother said, okay, I'm the elder brother here. Do I get a say? I got something to say. And he brought out a photo. I brought out a photo that was like 12 years ago, where his mother was carrying this girl in his arm. And the smile, and actually when they sit down and look at the picture, the smile of this little girl looked exactly like the smile of the boy they were proposing to marry. It looks similar, the smile. And in fact, right after the photo was taken, the mother 12 years ago told the husband, he said, actually this girl might be a suitable wife for a son. And Prabhupada said, hello, Hari Bol, our son is only 6 years old. This girl is only 4 years old. And he had just entered Gurukul. Please don't bring this up again. He's just starting his career as a brahmachari. And the boy has told, because the mother has get so many from her friends, said, can I get the child of your son, and so on. And he brought it up to his son, and her son, and son said, mother, I'm very happy and satisfied where I am in my ashram. Please don't bring this up to me. Bring up this subject again. But when I graduate from Gurukul, you can make whatever arrangement you want. I'll accept whatever arrangement. So, and it kind of just happened like that. You know? And that's how things are properly done. And then later on, when he went back there, just recently, actually earlier this week, there was an engagement, and there were so many pictures of exchanging of gifts. There's just so much loving exchanges there that you can see from the photos, offering a gift. And then the invited guests, they're also offering gift to the bride-to-be, the groom-to-be, and they're sitting there nicely, properly honored. Father cook a feast. And I was completely overwhelmed when I was reading the story and looking at all those pictures. I was so overwhelmed. This is culture. This is what Prabhupada is talking about. We're not going to conquer the world with philosophy. We're going to conquer the world with culture. That's what moves people, the culture. And what is culture? Culture means how we behave, our activities, our behavior, how we conduct ourselves, and our worship, at prasadam, how we receive guests, how we offer them. You know, the loving exchanges described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, offering a gift, accepting gift, offering prasadam, and accepting prasadam. That's no problem, offering prasadam, accepting prasadam. But then the last one is always, for devotees, a challenge, revealing our mind and inquiring confidentially. So these are the six loving exchanges between devotees that we have to learn to practice. And that's what moves people. We don't move people by philosophy. They listen to philosophy, oh, it sounds good. But what moves is that personal touch. And how is people touched by us? When we show our care, when we show love through our activities, we show care. And that's what touch people. Because out there is like a desert. They can't find, it's very hard to find real love out there, real caring. It's like every man for himself. That's modern day, new generation, me first generation. What is good for me is good for me. Right? And it doesn't matter, you guys have to step on someone, trample on someone to achieve what I want. So that's culture. That's what we should need to help to develop. And that begins by offering respect. Learn the culture again. And meet, especially if you haven't met for a while. Oh, Hari Bol Prabhu, please accept my humble obeisances. Then after that, there was the version was that instead of saying the whole Vancha Kaupada Rubyasha, Vancha, I think that's an Aussie thing. Vancha Prabhu, Vancha. What is Vancha? What is that? You know? Everything short version. Everything is cut short. There's no shortcut in this ritual. You have to follow the process. Imagine you say, all right, Hare Krishna mantra, 16 syllables too long. Cut it down to 8 syllables. Then we chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. Where is it going to end? So it's not the culture you feel very good about it, especially when you see them. Of course, some of you are closer and you can hugging is very common, hugging, embracing. It's okay, it's a show of affection, show of friendship, but offer businesses. Actually buying down, actually saying, one check up, actually saying, what? Why? Because we offer respect to a Vaishnava. The Vaishnavas are respectable. Because they're very dear to Krishna. So ultimately we're actually offering respect to the super soul. So I did manage to come with a tree. Or I probably hear this class, you will start quoting sloka after sloka to back up. Quote the single sloka. Anyway, are there any comments or questions? Wisecrack. Yes, Prabhu. Say again, louder, please.
We have tolerated the misery, Lord is best of constitution of Bhata.
I didn't get it.
Yes, so when the miseries comes upon us, the philosophical point is clear to us, but still the mind is, we understand we have to tolerate and take the guidance from the devotees. But still, if mind always stays with us and we want to be in a secluded place, we just try to figure out the best solution ourselves.
So you're saying that sometimes you know that what to do, but the mind play tricks, basically. Mind always play tricks. That's why they're saying, what is that? Shastra Shastra? Shastra Shastra. Shastra Shastra. Seeing through the eyes of the scripture. And that's why we have guidance of Shastra, we have the guidance of Guru, and we have the guidance of Sadhu. It never mentioned anywhere as a mana section. So, yes, especially in every stage of our devotional life, we will find this challenge where we face with a situation where we're going to listen to our mind or we're going to listen to what we have learned from the scripture of Guru Sadhu Shastra. That's where you get realization. Right? But in order to do that, requires discipline. Faith has to be there. But then again, faith is a funny thing. Unless you apply it, the faith don't grow. But if we try to understand the instruction of Rupa Goswami, Adau Shraddha, Tata, Sadhu, Sangha, Bhajana, Kriya. Everything begins with initial faith. That initial faith talk about is not just about faith in Krishna consciousness, taking up practice of Krishna consciousness. That also applies to every single thing we do. When we face the situation, do we have the initial faith? Okay, I may not understand this. I may not really understand. I'm facing this situation. My instinct or my natural reaction would, and my mind will be telling me to act in this way and that way. But is that the right way to do? What does the Shastra say? What are the instructions of the Guru and the Sadhus in to deal with situation like that? So take that leap of faith and follow the instruction instead. And blindly, then we realize, it's good. That's the right way to do things. And you develop realization. And your faith becomes strengthened. And next time, when you're faced with a similar situation, bam, you just go. That's how we advance. Don't expect that advancement in Krishna consciousness is always a smooth highway. Maya will always throw obstacles. But like I said last time, Maya, what does Maya mean? It can also mean Maya, my mercy. So obstacles are mercy of Krishna to challenge us, to force us, to confront us, to, okay, now come, take a next level now. Don't just go on neutral gear. Sometimes we just, you know, and we just go on neutral gear and we just carry forward by the momentum of our past. But sooner or later it's going to run out of steam unless we keep pedaling. So sometimes these incidents or situations like that confront us to test our faith and force us to go one notch up, one level up. And then in this way you keep making progress. By nature, we're lazy. We have said that described Bhagavatam. A symptom of Kali Yuga, we're lazy. Very often we just sit there and we don't push ourselves to do anything. But in the association of devotees, it's very difficult to be lazy. Sometimes even in the kirtan, it may be a rolling kirtan going on, everyone is jumping and you should. And instead of worshipping, our eyes are focusing on Krishna, we're focusing on our own lotus feet. Then you have other devotees come, hey, Prabhu, come on, and grab your arm. And you get out of that cobweb, and you start dancing, and you're happy. Sometimes you need a little bit of nudge, a little bit of push. But if you have too much force, you go, we don't have a little bit of humility, you start trying, then we get upset. But if you get upset like that, we miss an opportunity to be happy. Because basically what the devotee is trying to do is pull you in, get you out of the cobweb. And just, come on, join us, be happy. But our sometimes false ego is just too much. Or japa, you jump in, falling asleep, and then someone, Prabhu, she's sleeping. I'm not sleeping. I'm thinking of Krishna. I'm deep meditation. See how a false ego come in the way. Does that answer a question? Yeah. So leap of faith. You have to keep challenging ourselves. New level. That's why in the old days, I found it very useful in the old days when we learn slokas. When we learn sloka and then some of the sloka, we remember the sloka and then we try to meditate on the sloka. What is this sloka saying? What is this teaching here from Bhagavad Gita? What is the teaching of Bhagavatam? And try to contemplate on it, try to actually practice it. Like one of my favorite sloka is that it's spoken by Swambhu from Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma, but Sabama Bhattacha quoted it to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One of my favorite, I even forgot it. but basically, it's saying for a devotee, a sincere devotee will accept all obstacles, inconveniences as the mercy of Krishna. And you just go on with his devotional service. And such a candidate is a candidate for liberation. Of course, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was a Mayavadi, but after being converted to Vaishnavism, he changed the word Mukti Pade to Bhakti Pade. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu corrected him. He said, you cannot change the words from Bhagavatam. That's because you don't like it. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, Mukti Pade also means Bhakti. Because real liberation, full liberation means engaging us in devotional service to Krishna. Otherwise, is the liberation is not complete. So that was a verse I meditate a lot on. Every time I face some difficulty, some situation where it's very very tough, I will remember this verse, and I just take strength from that, and I just go on. So one way, anyway, the way the what I use, and I know quite a number of devotees also use that, identify with some of the leelas in the Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita, or even with Prabhupada Lilamrita, some of the pastime there, how those devotees overcome their challenges. How those devotees behave when they're faced with different situations. And own it. Own those stories. Embrace and own those stories. So when similar situation happen in your life, you take strength from those stories. Oh, this is what this devotee did in this similar situation. And you act accordingly. This is how they overcome their difficulty. These are not just story books. They're full of lessons there. Every page, every lila, they're full of. Just like this lila here, simple lila. So many lessons to be learned from these lilas. And that's how. For example, when I was in Sankirtan, sometimes really, really hard, and I just feel like throwing in a towel. And people are just walking all over you, this in your face, and it's cold, it's minus 10 degrees, minus 15 degrees out there. And you just want to give up. And I always draw strength from that part of Lilamrita of Prabhupada when he first came to New York, where he was not getting any real response. He was just on his own. And every so often he'll go to the senior steamship office, check out when is the next boat going back to India. And then he'll tell himself, he said, let me try a little bit more. Let me just try a little bit more to fulfill the order of my spiritual master. And kept going. So then that same thing I'll tell myself. I said, okay, I'll try another 15 minutes. And I'll go 15 minutes. And then the mind said, oh, 15 minutes is up. Yeah, okay, I'll try another 15 minutes. And I keep trying a little bit more, and then time can pick up. So I draw a lot of strength from that story of Prabhupada. The mind will tell give up, but from you don't listen to the mind, you listen to Shastra and the examples of sadhus. And that's where I gradually develop some determination. Now sir, any other question? Yes.
So this Rajat Maharaj Parikshit, he was in this Gurukul and he was trained and he was such a pious soul. Instead of that, in front of this
how
he suddenly become upset and he can do such an abominable activity, taking the snakes
around him. Yeah. Well, as I said in the beginning, normally under normal circumstances, Maharaj Parikshit wouldn't have done such a thing. But this whole pastime was arranged by Krishna to create that situation whereby he has to leave this world, and was given 7 days to leave this world, and that precipitated the speaking of Bhagavatam. So that Bhagavatam could be spoken, and how glorious he was that he just accepted it. He could have counteracted the curse. He's powerful enough, but he just accepted it as a fate of providence. And also in later verses there, he regretted what he did. And Prabhupada explained that regret is actually like a penance. Right? If someone make a mistake and he deeply regret it, that will counteract that negative activity. So, but anyway, the whole thing was arranged by Krishna. Under normal circumstances, he wouldn't have behaved that way. But he was just put in that mindset to prepare for the speaking of Bhagavatam. That's why sometimes, as they say, don't judge, never ever judge a devotee. Because you don't know what's going on actually there. What we see is just external happening. But every single devotee has a special connection to Krishna. And what is going on there, we don't know. And neither should we claim to know. So sometimes devotee may be going some really, really hard time or some difficult situation. We don't know what kind of lila is going on there. And what Krishna is how Krishna is dealing with that devotee. to prepare him for something great, or just putting him to that situation to make him learn something, or some purification process. Because, as Prabhupada said, he said, when we turn to Krishna once, he said, dear Krishna, from today on, I'm all yours. Krishna, take charge of that devotee. He will start making judgment of devotee, then we are on the path of doom. We will commit all kinds of Vaishnava parayas. So never judge. In fact, don't judge anyone. Not just devotee, just don't judge anyone. This is one of the first thing I learned in the life coaching course. As soon as you judge someone, you have disqualify yourself to be the coach for that person. You can't judge anyone unless you walk in that person's shoes for the last, I don't, whatever. Everyone has gone on a different journey than ours and come to this particular point. We don't know what it is. We don't know what caused that person to do, act, or think, or say in a particular way. Unless we take the trouble to try to understand what's behind it. A lot of problem between people is because we start judging. Just don't judge. Simple. Accept everyone as they are. If you can help, help. If you can't help, keep quiet. Any other? Okay, thank you very much for your attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.